Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He is a noted author. You can find his books at your favorite bookstore at totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report, the Iowa Politics Report, come to us from his flagship at KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff is kind enough to join us today. Hey, Jeff.
A flagship, you say?
A flagship.
It's a flagship.
Well, it's a good old-fashioned radio term, man.
It's called the place where he draws a meager salary with really insufficient health insurance.
Well, it's better than where he's chained to the floor and every once in a while they throw in some, you know, some food.
You want me to adjust the camera so you can really see?
No. For God's sakes, never turn a camera lower on any radio personality ever. I think we've learned our lesson during COVID on that one. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Tuba. Do you have any other legal briefs to share?
Oh, he's making a point. Anyway,
not much of one, just a small thing.
All right. Yesterday, we did actually have a pretty big primary day. Arizona, yeah. I think Ohio, Illinois, Kansas was up. All right. So once again, and I'm going to bring this up first because eventually I'm going to get to a point that kind of encompasses a lot of this. But once again, you look at those numbers from this. Trump's best state, I believe, was Florida, and he got, I think, 83% of the vote. The rest of them, Kansas, he only got 75% of the vote in Kansas. He was pretty much below 80% in, I think, three of the five major states, including Arizona, which is, once again, we look at last election. He's got to get all the voters back, and he still has to get a few more to win Arizona, Georgia. Those are two states particularly he has to win. And he still is having an attrition rate of about 20, I mean, at least with Nikki Haley still, like 15% there. You know, once again, I think that we are seeing a definitive problem that is not getting solved. And before anyone says, well, early voting stuff, Ohio wasn't early voting. It was like one day before Nikki Haley, they started voting early one day before Nikki Haley dropped out. And so most of that was post Nikki Haley, and he still lost, I think, 14% to her in that state as well.
Shut up about the early voting as an excuse.
Yes,
oh, there
I
was
agree
early
with
voting, and it went to other shut up, okay?
Not because me. I mean, you're just using it to people that use it.
No, actually, it was. No. But again, it was, oh, those are all Nikki Haley voters. She did not have that much support, okay? The thing that I find fascinating, and again, this is just driving my car down the middle of the road. Biden's getting 85%. Trump's getting 75%. It's a rematch with the highest vote total in history 4 years ago. And we're coming toward that rematch. And I don't care if Matt McNeil is running for re-election. He's not going to get more than 85%.
Well,
so shut up about the protest vote on Biden. Mm-hmm. The problem is the Republican side, where you have, for the third straight time, the nominee being Donald Trump. And
he's losing votes. He's losing votes.
They know him, right?
Yes.
He's not a new entity. And I would suggest it's a much bigger problem to have 25% who go in and vote. Leave it off, right? I mean, if you wanted to go to vote in the Ohio primary or Kansas or whatever, and there are other races, leave it blank.
Yeah.
But when you affirmatively say no, what does that tell you?
You affirmatively vote for someone who's out of it, and in the case. Now, first of all, let's back up about Biden, because Biden does have a little bit of this issue, too. The Washington Post pointed out it's not 85, it's about 90. He's getting about 90%, but it's on average about 10%. Michigan, Minnesota, Hawaii kind of blew him out on those. But a lot of states, he's actually been a lot closer. Ohio was interesting because they didn't have an uncommitted vote. They basically – so Dean Phillips out of nowhere got like 12 points in Ohio. I imagine it was the best day he's had in a while.
He's calling you on the phone saying, I want to get back in.
It's Phillips Mentum.
He's got the Dean Mentum. It's, you know, off we go.
But, you know, he's about 10%. And a lot of that vote, not all of it, but a lot of that vote is a current protest vote with the Israeli-Palestine situation. Right. And the expectation is only a fool would look at Trump and say he's going to deal with this better than Biden. And that's more than likely going to come back in the fold. Don't get me wrong. I have seen a lot of people go and interview Republicans at these events. And they'll say, oh, I'm tired of Trump. I'm not voting for him. And yet when they say, well, what happens if it's Trump versus Biden, they'll still stay with Trump. But you and I both know numbers, man. And it's time for us to start looking at numbers. If Trump basically got more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. He still lost Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. He lost states that he had before. He needs to get those back. If he loses 5% of his vote, which is a very reasonable number, he's got no chance at all of winning this election. And the fact, I think this is something you're seeing by the fact that across the board, the RNC and Republicans are not seeing these donations come in. I think people are seeing the math problem that he's having when you look at November.
5% is close enough to a rounding error if you were doing accounting, meaning you're on the margin. You cannot lose, right? I mean, it's a small amount that you can afford to give up. So that's number one. Number two, to your point about, and I still think any even popular Democrat incumbent, you know, you're going to have 10 or 15, maybe 20% who just, you know, just jab it in there. Okay. I mean, that doesn't bother me. Because again, to your point, will they come home?
Yeah.
Here's what I hear the difference being. When I talk to Democrats or I talk to Republicans, Democrats may have concerns about the current president, either in terms of certain policy issues or the frailties of age and is the vice president able? I mean, those conversations, that's what I hear. On the other side, I hear, I'm going to vote for the Republican in November. They don't say, I'm going to vote for Trump. They say, I'm going to vote for the Republican. Now, here's why that's important. Because when you disengage the personality from it, you're disengaging some of the passion. And that is has been Trump's stock in trade. Passion for him and what he represents. Well, when somebody detaches from that, I don't think the passion to vote Republican is the same as the passion to vote Trump. And so if you pivot, knowing who the nominee is going to be, and say, I'm voting for the Republican, ooh, that should be cause for concern. And I don't care, you know, I'm not talking about who the people are. Anytime, if somebody said to me, but this is the key point, Matt, they're not. But if somebody said to me, I'm voting for the Democrat, it's like, ooh, okay, that's, you know. So I'd say it regardless of which party, but I only hear it from one side.
I think that when you look at Haley's, I mean, it clearly is a protest vote. I mean, Haley getting 10 to 15% in these states, and particularly, and once again, I mean, the real red states, there's no problem there. That's Trump's not having issues there. It's these toss-up states, and for some reason, Kansas, which is a little surprising.
Well, but remember Kansas with the abortion issue last year?
Yeah.
I mean, Kansas became an outlier in a hurry because I think they can't get out of their own way with respect to the Dorothy and Toto and everybody else down there. I think they've taken it for granted. I mean, they've taken the redness for granted.
Kansas is becoming more like Utah every day. Have you noticed that? You and I could get into the minutiae of this stuff all day long.
Honest to goodness, I have not given that any thought, comparing Kansas to Utah. You're a better man than I am, or you have more free time. I don't know.
I work on a different plane. No, but I mean, you know how Utah Republicans are very different for the most part
than the other Republicans.
Right. Yes. And there seems to be a change going on in Kansas, and I can't quite figure it out. But that aside, you and I talked about this. Trump needed, the day Nikki Haley gets out saying, you know, what a great candidate. She gave me a good fight. All my best. I definitely would love to have her in my administration. Let's move on. Nope. Constantly attacks. Still is attacking her, calling her bird brain and all these things. Still going after her. It's stunning to me that someone in his campaign has not pulled him aside and said, shut up. You need every one of her voters. And all you're doing is turning them off.
How do you know they haven't?
Yeah,
this is not the first time.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Chicago, understand, this is not the first time that Matt has said, wouldn't you think somebody in Trump's inner circle would pull him aside and say, and that I've said, really? You want to be that messenger? Okay. Because again, what you just said, sir, is the logical point, right? Every successful leader, and I'm broadening this to business, not just government, they have to have somebody in their ear to be their better angel or to say, and to do it without fear of retribution. I don't know in Trump world if there is such a person. Matt McNeil could fill that job.
Yeah, I'll go talk to him in the Heinz ketchup room. No, I'm not going to go do that at all. Terrified about that. Okay, so I got to bring this up, though, okay? And all right, now, there's this weekend, this last weekend, a lot of people made a point about the bloodbath comment that he made. But I want to run the four comments. There were four, really, that he put out there. At the Ohio rally, Trump saluted a recording of a chorus of prisoners, calling them hostages, talking about how he was going to pardon them. Then he got to the bloodbath comment. He also demonized undocumented immigrants, telling supporters he thinks some crossing the border are animals, not even people. And then on the following day, he attacked Jewish Americans and went after them. Okay, all right. We can go into the minutia of any one of these single things and try our best to, you know, we'll take the Greek translation of the original German and see he didn't really say anything wrong. But the reality is this all was in 2 days, in really almost 24-hour period. He's putting all this out. He can't win with this kind of rhetoric, yet he cannot stop, frankly, cosplaying Hitler stuff, because this stuff is all kind of Hitler stuff. And it's kind of, I'm not saying he is, calling immigrants animals, going after the Jews, you know, talking about, you know, the beer hall pushed people as patriots, you know, we can go down this. I mean, this has happened before, and this is a very concerning trend with him, and it's not new. This is just the rhetoric. It seems to be much more focused now when you have four of those things in just a 24-hour period.
I made a face when you made the Hitler reference, not calling directly, but using it just because, everybody's going and we're missing the specifics. This is my only fear on it. Mm-hmm. So this shows you how my life is. All right. It's Saturday afternoon. It's really cold and windy. I started to work outside, said nuts to that. So I'm settled in watching the NASCAR race qualifying.
Yes.
They went to commercial. I then flipped around and I came upon the Trump rally in Ohio. This is a true story. There's no punchline. This is how I spent my life. And I came in just before he made the comment about Detroit and auto workers and economic bloodbath and on and on. Now, I'm sitting there. I hear the phrase bloodbath. And my immediate thought was, that's not going to end well for him.
Mm-hmm. And because, by the way, the exact quote, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. And sure, he was talking about the auto industry, but at no point did he refer to the bloodbath for the auto industry in his quote. It was basically...
Here's where it's worse.
Yeah.
Here's where it's worse. He was talking about the auto industry, and this is how I interpreted it, very clearly saying it's going to be a bloodbath. And had he stopped there, it might have been okay. But then he said, and not just there, it's going to be a bloodbath. Now, I interpreted that sitting there, you know, knowing a little Trump speak, I'm thinking he's broadening it with regard to economic. But I thought that's not the phrase you use. Mm-hmm. I don't care how many other people have used it. I mean, here's what I knew was going to happen that day. And I took another sip of my soda pop because it really was soda pop, sadly, because I knew that those on the right would say, look at those headlines on MSNBC from when the RNC employees were let go and they used the word bloodbath. And I also knew, though, which apples and oranges. Then I knew those on the other side would say, why are you saying bloodbath unless that's code? And I thought, why did you need to go there? You are not a professional politician, you say, but you've been at this now a decade. Never mind the public speaking for 50 years. That's not a word that just slides out.
No.
So, okay, put bloodbath over here. to your point, they started the whole thing with the J6 hostages and saluting them. Oh, gosh.
There was a theme there. There was a theme there. And by the way, it's a difference between an MSNBC employee and the guy running for the president of the United States. We'll finish on this, and then I'm going to get to my point. Jeff Stein joining us. Let's take a break. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Baby, it's hard outside. You're running across my mind. I was twisted, I was over it. Saying I never believed in us. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show with Jeff Stein on our Wednesday. And Jeff, you thought the same thing. I don't care, and I brought up the comparison to Buttigieg. Buttigieg could be out there talking about the interstate system, and he says, well, if this doesn't happen, it's going to be a massacre for the interstates, and it's going to be a massacre for everybody. That no longer is about the interstates. That's a different statement, and that's Buttigieg.
And here's my problem with it. You should know enough to know better.
Yes.
And you mentioned previously quoting from Mein Kampf or whatever. This is going back some months, and he was saying, oh, I've never read it. Then make darn sure you don't make any references that even seem like you might have heard of it. You know, I mean, there's a tin, and this is the problem. Now, he was in Ohio, and again, before the break, we mentioned, again, he called the January 6th incarcerated individuals hostages, et cetera. Okay. He was pushing hard for his Senate candidate to get over the top. The only reason he went to Ohio was to make sure that his choice for Senate got over the top. Mm-hmm. And he did. Barely over 50%, lots of candidates in the primary. But that's why he went, and it was kind of thrown together at the last minute. So that, my point is, was a red meat audience. But at the same time, then the next day he goes out and says, I'm coming up with my abortion compromise plan. Well, okay, you know, but that's going to leave a lot of the base behind. So as we have discussed for decades, you know, fine, you've got your nomination, but now you need the independents. And to your earlier point, how are you going to bring those people in? And the messages are they got to get on track if they intend to pick up those independents, which both parties need.
I'm going to refer to this. This is going to be my point, and I want to get your thoughts on this. All right. You've always said Trump's not a Republican. Trump's there for himself. Trump's in big trouble. I mean, these court cases. I mean, already he's $500 million in the hole. He's not going to get away from that. He's going to have to pay that. And you know as well as I do that, regardless of what wealth he does have, that image being taken down is not that would be destroying his world. You've got we already know January 6th is not going to go the same way as it did 4 years ago. You've got, I guarantee you, Biden will have troops in the Capitol, and I guarantee you Kamala Harris is not going to basically entertain Trump's, you know, machinations. I'm starting to wonder, considering the reluctance to embrace Haley, considering the rhetoric that he's putting out, which we talked about, I'm wondering if they're seeing internal numbers in that campaign, which back up what we talked about at the beginning of this, which is he has just lost a portion of the Republican Party that is showing him that this is not going to go well for him this year. And I am very concerned that when you look at that rhetoric and who's it geared for and who he, as you brought up with Ohio, who's he focusing his talks to right now? That if he does not win in November, that he knows that he has 2 months and once again, this is a guy that's basically into himself. He's the biggest narcissist I've ever seen. If he feels as if all of a sudden he could lose everything, he could be fined, he could lose all of his properties and go to jail, then at that point he is now cornered. And does he call for the people that he's trying to appeal with this rhetoric to do something else? And I mean, and before anyone says, well, Matt, don't overreact, January 6th. I mean, come on. It's clear there is this element that's being cultivated. And I'm a little concerned about where this is going.
Without agreeing with every foundational point you make.
Okay.
Okay. If he were to lose the general election, I think it depends at that point on whether there's a conviction already or not in a criminal court. And it also depends on what the margin is and how it all plays out. I don't know that he can marshal the sort of support necessary to get people to come to Washington, D.C. in 2025. Mm-hmm. Partly because of what happened in 2021. Now, again, I'm not suggesting blame for that. I'm just being as neutral as I possibly can. Given the backdrop of 2021, January 6th, I don't know how many people are going to go visit the Capitol for any reason.
And very surely, valid, yeah.
And surely not with someone who did not win as expected or as they expected. I just don't think, so again, I'm not downplaying, just in the same way you're not hyping it up, I'm not overly downplaying it. I just don't know that if it is a resounding defeat, I think it's, you know, in the words of the pop song that your kids listen to, thank you, next.
Yeah.
And people move on.
My guess would be is if it comes down to it and he realizes he does not have, you know, as you just said, I mean, would you really want to go there? Because there's a lot of guys that are sitting in jail right now and are going to, at that point, no, they're not going to get pardoned and they're going to have to finish out their prison terms at that point. That do you really want to go and risk it? My guess is going to be at that point, if he's, and he seems to be somewhat successful at stalling his court cases right now. If it gets to a point where it's after November, the election day, and he's lost, I have to ask the question is how much longer he's even in the United States, because I think that, you know, he's going to try to basically hide as much of his money as he can. He's got properties in other countries. You know, he could, and I, you know, Saudi Arabia, yeah, Russia. I wonder how much longer he'd be here.
Well, but they're holding his passport, are they not, as a condition of bail in the Georgia case?
I don't know if they, well, they might. I didn't know.
Well, wasn't that where, when didn't he say you seized three of my passports when you took documents from Mar-a-Lago? It's like, how do you have three passports? You know, I mean, so that's what sticks in my mind.
You're right. But, I think, I don't know if they did. I know they captured a lot of the other guys in that RICO case. I don't know if they took his because of the nature of what his former position was.
Well, but I seem to recall we had a conversation about, he said, they took three of my passports and we both, how do you have three of my passports?
I forgot about that. That was good, man.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The only thing I'd say about delaying and stalling, when you look at the normal court calendar, this is me as a lawyer talking, when you look at the normal time it takes for cases to move along,
yeah,
I side with some on the left who are saying to the Justice Department, what the hell did you wait so long for? You should have done this a year ago so that we wouldn't have this issue. So when he's asking for certain delays, it's no different than, you know, the state or the government versus Matt McNeil. You'd get the same treatment.
Well, and the same thing is, he's got the lawyers, he's got the money, and the January 6th defendants, they don't have this ability to stretch it out. They've actually been getting convicted. Jeff Stein, once again, find his books everywhere. We'll post the Iowa Politics Report later. Thank you, Jeff. Chicago, have a good one. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next.